So last month, for those of you that were here, I'll just remind you that I told you how I got my job in pharmaceutical sales. And I had quite a lot of success in that almost 15-year career. And after about 9 years in, I won a trip. And also within that 9-year period since I started and won the trip, I met the love of my life, who I'm still with, John. And when I won this trip, it was to Aruba. And just to back up a little bit, John, when he was in his 20s, had an opportunity to go to the Amazon, but it fell through. And shortly after I started working for Bristol-Myers Squibb, I read a book called Tales of a Shaman's Apprentice. And ever since I read that book, it was about an ethnobotanist who spent a year in the Amazon jungle learning about the medicinal uses of the, you know, flora there. So when I won the trip to Aruba and we looked at a map and said, oh my gosh, Venezuela is just like a hop, skip, and a jump. We're already being sent to Aruba. Let's plan a trip at our own expense, an additional week, and go to the Amazon like we'd always wanted to do individually. So together we would go to the Amazon. So we went. We had enough time to plan. We went to the local health department, got any shots we needed, got all the advice we needed, got iodine pills, and I arranged the whole trip online through a company called Echo Voyager. So it was pretty much going into it blind, just did it all online. We knew we'd be leaving Aruba and going to Caracas and, you know, planned the whole thing out. So the time came and we went to Aruba. We had this wonderful week, white sandy beaches, five-star resort, cocktailware, the whole thing. And then at the end of that trip, we left our cocktailware behind and boarded a plane to Caracas, where we were to be met by a driver who would take us to our hotel in Caracas for the night, then pick us up the next morning, and we would go on to the second leg of our trip. And so that's what we did. Our high school Spanish was pathetic, but somehow we managed to order coffee and, you know, do little things like that. So the driver picked us up, and we were very surprised. This was in the year 2000, so this was even before 9/11. And ignorance is bliss, because little did we realize when we arranged this that Venezuela was in the middle of a revolution. What's-his-name had just taken power about a year and a half before, and he had this rule by decree. So anyway, the whole airport was full of men with machine guns. We were the only American tourists we saw anywhere. And when we first got there, we were desperately looking for the driver with the sign with our names and found him. He took us to the hotel. He said, don't go out at night. There's about 30 murders a day in Caracas, and this was back in 2000. He said, just stay in your room. I'll pick you up first thing in the morning. So we heeded his advice, put the iodine pills in our water. Next morning, he came and got us and took us to the Caracas airport again, where we were to board our plane for Puerto Ayacucho, which was where we were going to actually meet our guide for the trip. So one thing we learned was that in Caracas anyway, gates, times, even destinations are approximate. And so there's no assigned seating. So we finally, I can't believe actually that we got our plane, but we got our plane. We sat in the back, and the airline hostess said they would be making one stop before Puerto Ayacucho that wasn't on the schedule. So we thought, well, when we get to that stop, we'll move up front. Well, it turns out they didn't make a stop, because when they finally stopped and we said, can we move up closer, she said, this is the destination. This is Puerto Ayacucho. So en route, they decided not to make that other stop that they were going to make. So we're like, oh, my gosh, what have we gotten ourselves into? But Puerto Ayacucho Ayacucho is on the Colombian border, and there again, no American tourists, swarming with machine-gunned guards. And once again, we were scanning the crowd for our guide. He recognized us. I'm sure we stuck out like a sore thumb and came up to us. And so the next leg of the trip was with a pilot who was going to take us to Camp Yutahe in the Venezuelan Amazon. And so Patrick, our guide, who was from British Guiana and spoke very good English, and my husband and I boarded this little six-passenger, single-prop Cessna with no GPS and flew for 1 hour over prehistoric. I mean, it was just amazing. It looked like broccoli with this winding brown ribbon going through it, you know. And I couldn't believe he had no GPS, but he said he was an experienced pilot, and, you know, we kind of went with it. And landed about an hour and 20 minutes later in Puerto Ayacucho. We could see from the air the thatched roofed huts and the little runway, and got there and were greeted by chickens, two dogs, a parrot, or a macaw, rather, and Claudio, Franco, and Antonio, who were camp residents. Once again, because of the political climate in Venezuela, it turned out we were the only guests there all week long, where it was a big vacation destination for people who wanted to go to the Amazon. But we had the whole place to ourselves, and the cook and the boat driver and our guide, Patrick. So we went into the main mess area that first day after arriving and had a lunch of cassava, wild boar, mango. This was very common fare for the whole 4 days that we were there, 4 days and four nights. And so in the afternoon, during lunch, Patrick explained to us that there were eight species of piranha, and only two are dangerous to men. And that not to worry, we were going to go swimming after lunch. He was going to take us in the dugout canoe to a waterfall area where we could swim. And he said, don't worry, the water's really high. So unless you had a cut or something, you wouldn't have to worry about piranha. And he said, plus the tannin content is very strong in this part of the river. And the river is the Orinoco, which is a tributary of the Manapayer, which is a tributary of the Orinoco River. So we went out in the dugout canoe, and we thought, what the heck? I mean, we already drank the water. He said, you won't need your iodine pills here. This is very pure water in the camp. And, you know, as we're about to go into the river that might not have piranha, he said, echoing in my head was the county warnings about don't swim in anything but salt water, you know. But I thought, you know, when in Rome. So we drank the water, we swam in the river, we didn't have any trouble at all, and it was so hot that the river was so refreshing. It was ice cold, and it looked like tea because of all the tannins. So swam in the river, went on some more journeys with the canoe, got back around dinner time, had a wonderful meal, and talked some more to Patrick, our guide. And he said, we asked, well, why can't, since we're the only guests here, why can't Franco and Claudio and Antonio eat with us? And he said, because you're guests. So anyway, we went to our thatched roof hut, and this was our first night, and the beds were like toddler size. And he told us that there was a generator in the camp for light, but it went off at midnight. So we sat up in our little toddler beds, dripping wet with perspiration. I made notes for the day. John looked at maps. As we sat there, the insects began gathering on the screens of the thatched roofed cabana. And some of them actually got in. And we thought, oh my gosh. And these were gigantic insects like I'd never seen before. So we thought, let's turn the light off and go to sleep, because the light is probably drawing these insects. So at about 10 to midnight, we turned off the light before it went off by itself. And, you know, we're just laying there, each of us as spread eagle as we could be on our toddler-sized beds in our birthday suits because it was 100 degrees, 100% humidity. I was just about to fall asleep, and this gigantic Amazon buzzing thing landed about 6 inches below my navel. Yeah, right there. And my screams were competing with the howler monkeys, and I gave new meaning to dancing in the dark. I mean, it was so pitch black. And by then, the lights were off. And so for the rest of the night, as hot as it was, I cocooned myself, and my husband did the same thing, cocooned myself in the sheet, head to toe, and didn't sleep at all that night. Neither one of us did. So the next morning, I'm almost finished. The next morning, we asked, since we were the only guests at the camp, could we please be moved to one of those tin roof cabins over there? Get rid of the romantic thatched roof hut and stay in a little cabin with a tin roof. So when we got back from our adventures of the next day, that's what happened. All our luggage had been moved into the tin roof cabin. There were no insects because above the slatted ceilings, and I would say the slats were maybe 3 inches apart, were a thriving metropolis of bats that came in and out all night long. And every morning there was a fresh pile of bat dung in the corner of our little tin roof cabin. But despite all that, we learned so much about the Amazon jungle. We were in the neotropical jungle, which I thought it was going to be like this Tarzan experience, but because it was neotropical, there are fewer birds, fewer fruits, and only about 20% of the flora has been named, and there's actually an ethnobotany lab from Cornell in Camp Utahe. So I could go on, but the highlight, unbelievable as it was, the highlight of the story was the 4 nights of no sleep.